be active and participate in the revitalization of their own community, that I and other people would go out and raise the funds for them and get the technical assistance for them. And so the idea was that they would, what they wanted to do, their priorities were to build a water system and rehab houses. If I or somebody else had come down there, we would have said what they really need is youth programs or something like that. But they, what they said is what we'd like to have is indoor plumbing, and we'd like to have our houses fixed up, and then we can talk about youth programs and elderly programs and these other kinds of things. So we struck a deal with them and said, if you physically will do the labor and if you physically will do help do the organizing, then I'll facilitate the process. And we made this deal with one another. What's interesting is when I went around to try to get funding for this project, which is a simple project. You put in water systems, you rehab houses, you build new houses. People thought I'd fallen out of a tree. They said that essentially that these people in this community had never worked for a living, so they sure weren't going to work as volunteers. Another thing I remember people telling me is that I shouldn't be going out there by myself at night. And all kinds of things, mostly very negative things. And yet we pressed on. We had an interesting incident. We had there's a program on CBS called CBS Sunday Morning News that likes to do shows about victims. And this fellow heard about us through this foundation that was helping us. And he arranged to come down and film this project because he wanted to do a project about a poor community that was trying to revitalize itself and would fail, and they wanted to film this process. And so they made a commitment to be with us through the duration of the project, through the first meeting where people were talking about whether or not it could be done, through some of the training sessions, through the election of the steering committee, and that sort of thing. And so the CBS Sunday Morning News people actually ended up coming there and filming a success. When the it was one of the best things that's ever happened to me was to spend fully 12 months on something that I believed in. I believe in our people, and I believe in our people's ability to take charge of their own destiny. And to spend all that time organizing and working on a project, and then you just kind of hold your breath on the first day and hope that people really do show up. And so when the volunteers, every single family in that community got out and worked very hard to construct their own water system, rehab their own houses, and build their own houses, and that community is forever changed, not just physically, but also in the way they view themselves and their ability to create change. And so anyway, that the CBS Sunday News piece that they originally planned to use to illustrate the plight of victims in this country is a film that we now use as a training film to help help community organizers. So we just stayed steady. This, I believe, this kind of project, and we've done this 10 or 12 times in other communities, is slowly, slowly rebuilding the capacity of our people to take charge of their own lives. What it also did is that it taught our people to essentially trust their own thinking again. For a long, long time, I think our people have been told to trust the thinking of the federal government, or various officials around, people external to themselves. And what this little bitty project did in this little tiny community really is it taught people to realize, but through their own experience, that their thinking was valid, and that they, better than anybody else, knew what was best for their community, could articulate it, and could actually implement it. So after that project, they rebuilt a community building, again with volunteer labor. They started a rural fire department, so their insurance rates were were lower. They started a bilingual education project, a youth project. They're doing all kinds of things down there, and we've long since left. All this is stuff that they're doing entirely on their own. And this is also happening in many other communities. What that's doing is it's building the capacity of the people for leadership. Two of the people that were involved in those kinds of projects have now been elected to the tribal council. And we hope to elect more people who've been in those kinds of involved in those kinds of projects also. And their facilitator has been elected the tribal chief. So I think we're making making some progress in looking at the revitalization of tribal government, at least from my perspective. That does not mean that we're not doing all the traditional things. We're doing institutional development. We're pressing claims through the judicial system. We're doing all the things that everybody else is doing. But we're also bringing the people along with us, which I think is very, very difficult, but also very necessary. In this last year, we brought in a facilitator who brought together people from all 10 of the communities to talk about, articulate their vision for the tribe. We then took some of their goals, and then we've incorporated them into the overall tribal goals. So I think that as we continue to do this work, we're going to continue to see more people at the grassroots level having an impact on the tribe. People wonder, I think, about what I see in these communities or in other reservations and other Indian people that makes me so positive about our ability to turn things around. Because when we initially started turning things around, I was one of the few positive people around. And I wanted to share with you some thoughts. We all know the bad things that are going on in our communities. But I also think there are some very good things that are going in our communities and tribal communities throughout this country, which help to contribute to our move for the revitalization of tribal governments. One thing above all that I see among our people, no matter where they're at, is tenacity. The fact that we exist as a culturally distinct group within this country today in 1989 speaks volumes about our tenacity. The most powerful country in the world first tried to wipe us off the face of the earth, and failing that, then instituted a series of policies designed to make sure that our culture did not survive. And yet, despite all that, we survive. We survive. Our languages are intact. We have a cultural system that's intact. We have a social system that's been impacted, I'll grant that, but we still have many of our old cultural factors are still play a part in our everyday life. We still have a lot of our art forms. I'm still able to see, as I travel around and then return to my own home, I'm still able to see that there is a distinct, very clear difference in the social system of the tribal people in rural Oklahoma and many other people. So that's still very, very much intact. And this wasn't intended to happen. By now, we were supposed to have gone away. And so I think that I see many, many positive things. I also see that many tribal governments have become stronger and are very strengthened. I see many, many positive things around Indian country that lead me to believe that we have made some strides in self-government and in tribal government, and that we're going to continue to move forward. My own goal for my own tribe, and I'm sure everybody has goals for their work, my own goal in looking around my tribe and my communities was to try to reestablish a situation where we had whole, healthy communities again, where our people were able to believe in themselves and not think that there's some mysterious they out there that's going to solve their problems, and understand that we have the best ideas, that indigenous thinking is the best thinking, and that we have the solutions to our own problems. And I've spent most of my time trying to promote that work in eastern Oklahoma, and to some extent in other tribes. So I think there's a good future for our tribe, and also for other tribal governments. I think we have very strong tribal governments, contrary to what you've been hearing, I'm sure, lately in the national press. Now, just briefly, I'd like to talk about my election, because I think there are some women here who'd be interested in that, and then I'll answer some questions, and we can get into whatever discussion you want to get into. In 1977, when I began work with the Cherokee Nation, there were no female executives there. And I certainly didn't begin work with the Cherokee Nation with the idea of becoming the first female chief or deputy chief or anything else. There were women who were working there, but there were no women in executive positions. And I began work coming from this very activist kind of background, and being there sort of reluctantly, but feeling it was necessary. I had two children. I was divorced. It was about the only place to work. And so trying to figure out some way that I could do some good in that position. I had a knack for development. I liked to develop programs, to listen to people talk, and then put together programs and go out and get funding for them. So I began to develop programs for the Cherokee Nation in the 70s, in the late 70s. And as I began to develop programs, I generated revenue for the Cherokee Nation. And as I generated revenue for the Cherokee Nation, I caught the attention of the male hierarchy, and I began to move up. In 1981, I was encouraged to establish the Community Development Department to broaden my work, and so I put that together, and I was its first director. A staff did put the funding together and directed it. In 1982, I was serving as the director of the Community Development Department when our former chief, Mr. Swimmer, Ross Swimmer, developed a very bad systemic cancer. When it was interesting, if you're interested in institutional psychology, it was interesting to watch what happened in 1982. Mr. Swimmer was in chemotherapy a lot. So when he was in the office, he was sick or he was gone a lot. During this period of time when he was taking chemotherapy and he was quite ill, the person who had ran with him as deputy chief on a ticket in 1979 announced that in 1983 he was going to run against him for chief, believing that probably that Mr. Swimmer could never win an election in his physical state. Many of the male executives there believed that the new person in power would be the deputy chief, so they all aligned themselves politically with the deputy chief. And the organization began to suffer. Rather than rallying around the chief during this time of illness, everybody was grabbing for power and jockeying for positions of power. During that time, Mr. Swimmer asked me if I would attend some meetings for him and do some things for him, and I did, and he was satisfied with my work. In 1983, when he recovered, he began to think of running for election again. He reached over all the people who had paid their political dues and asked me if I would run with him for election as deputy chief, which was quite the Cherokee scandal at that time. I'm a liberal Democrat. He's a conservative Republican. And it was an interesting discussion. When I ran for election in 1983, running for, in a tribe, a large tribe, running for election is sort of like running for Congress, because you have to go all over the 14 counties and sometimes out of the state to little pockets of voters and other places. And I at first had difficulty imagining myself going out and trying to sell myself like a tube of toothpaste, but I eventually kind of got the picture. It was interesting because I had never really had to fight people openly, sexist people openly. People, obviously, there's evidence of sexism in society all around, but I'd never had to deal with it as directly as when I entered the election, which was kind of interesting because my job as community development director was sort of work that traditionally had been held by men. I was supervising engineers, building houses, building water systems, buying backhoes and those kinds of things, and no one questioned my ability because I was female. And yet when I wanted to become a leader, people all of a sudden said, no, you can't do that. And somehow or another, people began to talk about leadership being not open in our tribe, not being open to women. It's a very hurtful election and a very hurtful discussion. I did fairly well in debate in high school and in college, and yet I found myself unable to respond when people came up to me and said purely sexist kinds of things about female leadership. I remember during that time I had a friend who was on the board of the Ms. Foundation for Women, and I called her up and asked her for some witty things to say to people so that when they came up and said things to me, I could say something funny back to them instead of just standing there looking at them. And I won't repeat what she told me to tell them. We did talk, and I did figure out a way to deal with that. And the way I decided to deal with it is to ignore it. I did not consider gender to be an issue as it relates to leadership. I thought it wasn't an issue at all. I didn't see any point in debating a non-issue, and so I ignored it. One time, on the back of a little tea box, I saw something that I remembered all through that election. There was a little saying that said, don't ever argue with a fool, because somebody walking by and looking at you won't be able to tell which one is the fool. And that's sort of how I thought of people who wanted to argue with me about whether or not women should be in leadership positions. So another thing that was kind of interesting that happened during that election is that I'd never been involved in politics before, so I decided to have a political rally. And I have a friend who has a house that has a lot of historical significance to the Cherokee Nation. It's an old house. And we ordered stuff catered and put it on the radio and the newspapers, and we were expecting about 500 people to come to the rally. This was at the height of the debate of whether women should be in office in the Cherokee Nation. Preachers were getting up and saying it was an affront to God, and there were columns in the newspapers saying that the Cherokees had never elected a woman. Anyway, at the height of this debate, we had this rally, and in this nice house with all this food, and three people showed up. And I think two of them were related to me. Being a fairly perceptive person, I knew that there was no way it could go but up after that. And so I hung in there and continued on, and I did win the election. And I served from 1983 to 1985 as deputy chief and president of the council in our tribe. You serve as president of the tribal council when you're deputy chief. And so that was kind of interesting too. 1983, most of our tribal council were older men, and they were not just real thrilled about a 37-year-old woman becoming their president. And I remember this one guy, he's an ex-boxer, real macho guy, and he was always interrupting me and giving me a bad time. And when I came into my first meeting and was to conduct my first tribal council meeting, he was always telling me I was violating some obscure rule that I didn't even know about, or that I hadn't followed some procedure that I'd never even heard of. And so what I did is I got all the microphones fixed so that between the first meeting and the second meeting so that I could turn his microphone off. And so that... That's called asserting yourself. And so that after that we began to understand each other a little bit better. And we got along, rocked on, we got used to each other, and then in 1985, Mr. Swimmer decided to resign and go to Washington. And when he resigned and I moved up, it was interesting. I thought that we would go back through the same debate all over again, and I prepared myself in every way I knew how. I went to a medicine man, I prepared myself all kinds of ways, ready for the big debate again. It was interesting because nothing happened. And people had, in that two-year period, become accustomed to female leadership and had decided that the ship was not going to sink just because there was a woman at the helm. And I remember one thing in that time. It's just a little incident, really, but it always is something that serves for me as kind of a turning point. I was very tense right after Mr. Swimmer left and waiting for the other shoe to drop, essentially. And I went, some older Cherokee tribal members said they wanted to have a cake and coffee for me. And I went up to the cake and coffee that they were having for me. And when I walked in the room, they all stood up and started clapping. And I, honest to God, thought there was somebody behind me. And once I understood that there was nobody behind me and that those people were happy I was chief, I began to relax a little bit. Then in 1987... when our tribal elections came up again, I served obviously without election from 1985 to 1987. When 1987, when our elections are in the summer of 87, when three very strong candidates, male candidates, announced that they were going to run for election, so my friends started coming by and saying to me, "Wilma, I don't think you should run for election this year. You've done a lot for women, and it would be bad for women if you were to get out there and lose. And we need to just leave this for a while." And I had lots of other people who came by and told me that I could get elected as deputy chief, but I could never get elected as chief. And during that period of time, I told my husband that if one more group or person comes by and tells me not to run simply because I'm a woman, I'm going to run for sure. And I did run in 1987 against three very strong candidates, and the election was very volatile, but kind of fun in a way. And I did win the election completely on my own. And I think now, if you were to talk to everyday Cherokees, most Cherokees, that they would tell you that they really don't think that leadership is related to gender. But most of our people are poor people. And I think what most of our people care about is that whether or not their lab tests are done properly at the clinics, or whether the adult ed teacher shows up on time, or whether they get their higher education grant when they're supposed to, or whether they can come to a tribal council meeting and be heard. Those are the kinds of things that I think are important to people, and not whether there's a male or female at the top. They care more about efficiency. So I think that for our people, anyway, the issue of female leadership has been resolved. And I've been very encouraged by the fact that several other women across the country have been elected in their respective tribes also. So I think that's an issue that's been settled. But I think what's worse about stereotypes is when we hear them so often that we begin to believe them ourselves. Sometimes I can sit around and have coffee with some women who will tell you that they don't like female bosses because they think that men make better leaders. And that's from hearing that stereotype so often they begin to believe it themselves. Or I talked to an older man in our tribe who had gone to try to get Social Security or something, and he just left when they didn't treat him right. And I said, "Well, why didn't you speak up? You know, why didn't you tell them that they had not treated you right?" And he said, I don't know, I guess it's just the Indian in me that's quiet. And I told him, you know, there's nothing in our history, and there's nothing in our culture, and there's nothing in our background that says we should be quiet and let people walk all over us. So that's a stereotype that we begin to hear so often that we begin to leave it, we begin to believe it ourselves. So I think that it's important for all of us to try to get rid of any stereotypes we might have about one another. So, and I hope that my being here tonight will help to eliminate any stereotype that any of you people might have about what a chief looks like. And on that note, I'll take some questions. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You don't have to do that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.